You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by the team at Food Matters. Welcome to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by Food Matters. In these podcasts, we explore a huge range of crucial issues and exciting developments in the food industry with brilliant guests drawn from all areas of expertise. I'm Stephen Gates. I'm a TV presenter and writer, and I specialize in food and science. This podcast is one of our series about sustainable business, and it's all about the rise of the B Corp. Today, we're joined by Paul Hargreaves, founder and chief exec of Cotswold Fair, one of the first businesses to become a B Corp back in 2015. And Paul is now a B Corp ambassador. Welcome, Paul. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's good to be here.
Now, before we delve into the B Corp issue, can you just tell us the story behind your business? Not the whole half hour story. Just give us the basic sense of the journey that you've been on.
Yeah. So very briefly, because this can go on for ages. So I was working in various charities in Southeast London, and run out of money. So started selling artisan food products from the Cotswolds to local delis in London and some farm shops around the edge of London. This was whilst I was actually doing another full-time job, and really was just to keep the wolf from the door. So this was in the 90s. It was just happened to be around the time when farm shops were starting properly and turning from sheds to proper shops.
Yeah.
So over a few years, very part-time, built up some turnover, just supplying three or four brands to those kind of outlets. It got to the point where it was too big to carry along working from the house. It was gradually filling up more rooms in the house, and my children were finding it difficult to have room to go to bed at night. So we had to make a decision. Do I stop or do I start doing this properly? So in 1999, or probably end of 98, met another guy just through a friend of a friend, lived in Reading. He had come back from Africa, was looking to do something interesting. We got talking and decided to turn it into a proper business, if you like. So when people ask, when did you start? I say 1999, because before that, it wasn't really a business in the proper sense of the word. So we got our first staff, we got our first building, and started in Reading in 99.
And what's changed over the last 21 years then?
Now you're making me feel old. Well, a lot's changed, not just for us, but in the specialty food sector, clearly. Well, just to give you an example, actually, in 99, we did the first ever specialty food show. We were one of the 40 or so exhibitors, so small that they actually let you drive your car and park next to the stand to unload, which was absolutely marvellous, of course. If anyone who's exhibited at one of those shows knows the pain is in the setting up and the taking down. Mm. It occupied a tiny part of Olympia. Jump forward, this year would have been the 21st. Obviously, it got cancelled due to COVID. But 20 years later, the show is obviously, as you know, absolutely huge. Fills Olympia, and I don't know how many exhibitors they have. I think it's nearly 900 now. So that, I think, is a good kind of parallel of how the specialty food sector has grown during the 21 years we existed.
I should say so. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah. So, you know, in many respects, you could say we just happened to be in the right place at the right time. We came in to the industry when it was very young, and Cotswold Fair has grown with the specialty food industry as it itself has grown.
Fantastic. Okay, so I thought that was well done. Actually, quite. You know, you didn't go too far. Not too much of an advert for us. So we can move on to the case at hand, which is the rise of the B Corp. So first of all, just define a bit for us, what is a B Corp?
Yeah, so I'll answer that in a minute. Just let me go back in time, because one thing I was keen to do at the start of Cotswold Fair, having been in the charitable sector, which it can be very frustrating, to be honest. I mean, The charitable sector is all about repairing mess, a mess that people have created themselves, mess that governments created, mess that businesses have created one way or another. So when we started, the other guy did it with Dave. He was of the same mind as me, that we wanted to not just use the business as, you know, paying ourselves and feeding our children, but also do some kind of good at the same time. So three of our first five employees had various issues. One came from a drug rehab place, one was an alcoholic, and one had just come out of prison. And we wanted to use the business to give them a chance in life. They were what some people might call unemployable. We didn't think that. So we employed them and tried to use the process of employing them and the routine of daily work to you know, improve their lives. So that's where Cotswold Fair started. I'll confess, Dave, he left after a couple of years. We weren't making any money. So I, to be honest, put my hands up, and we probably went away from that DNA, if you like, of the business. We got caught up with, you know, the normal pressures of startups, running out of money, all the challenges of starting a business. And it's tough. You know, there's lots of people listening, I'm sure, who are in the same position. It can be really, really tough. Having said that, probably about halfway through the life of the company, 10 years in, I kind of realized that we had moved away from that. And we were, you know, we were profitable at that point, much more sustainable business. And we started reaching out to an orphanage in Kenya. Went out there with my daughter, and we the company got involved with this place. We started raising money for it, various balls, and started looking out of ourselves again, which was very much needed. In 2014, I had a conversation with Ed Perry, who is the co-founder of Cook, the frozen food company. And he mentioned this organization called B Corp. Now, my first thought, I'll confess, was, that sounds a bit American for me, Ed. what on earth is B Corp? So the name put me off a bit, to be honest, but I looked into it and actually realized that here was a group of people that believed everything about business. I believed that business was, should be there to make the world a better place. And over the years of capitalism, actually business had done the very opposite in many cases. And it really was, for me, it was just like coming home. I thought naively that maybe I was the only person that believed business wasn't just about making money for the shareholders. Suddenly here were a load of other people who thought exactly the same as me, that actually business, yes, it is about profit, but it's about changing people's lives, and it's about making the planet more sustainable as well. So that was absolutely fantastic. We were one of the first 40-odd companies in the UK to certify, and in 2015, B Corp UK was launched.
And just to be clear, B Corp is, it's not a sort of regulatory issue. It's a sort of private accreditation organisation. Is that right?
Yes. So as a B Corp, you do two things, really. One is to change your articles of association, i.e. the law of your company, to not just be there for profit, but be there for all other stakeholders, which includes planet and people and community and the world community as well. So you do that, and then you choose to be certified every 2 years now, every three, in a rigorous certification process, which covers five areas: governance, community, environment, workers, and customers. And you get asked loads and loads of questions, over 200 in our case. We're just going through our certification at the moment, our recertification at the moment. And not only do you have to answer questions, but you have to provide evidence that you're doing what you're doing. Now, if you get over a certain score, which happens to be 80 out of 200, which doesn't sound too onerous, does it? 40%, you think, well, that's quite easy. It's not. Yeah. I mean, it's easier for us because we were doing some of this stuff anyway, but for a normal company that chooses to be B Corp, it can be really difficult to get over that line, especially if you're a traditional normal business. If you're a company that's doing something interesting around food waste, for example, yes, it would be easier to get over the line. But we scored in 2015, when we first certified, we got 84 points. And over the next 2 years, inspired by other B Corps, we made loads of positive changes. 2 years later, we recertified in 2017. We got 84 points again. I thought, what's going on? We're so much better than we were 2 years ago. So I actually rang the office in America to say, what's going on? We've done this, we've done that. How come our points? The same one said, oh, didn't you know the bar gets higher every year?
What?
So I thought I was slightly discouraged at the time. But now, Ariz, actually, that's one of the best things about it, because it forces companies to continue improving. You can't just sit back on your laurels. You've got to be better. Next time you certify, if you're just over the line like we were, you've got to be better than you were in order to and obviously that's what the world needs, isn't it? Companies to be driven forwards in a sustainability direction.
Yeah. Now, I've got to ask the dimmest question of this entire podcast. What does the B stand for?
Well, that's a good question, because a lot of people think it stands for benefit, which it doesn't. There is a legal entity in the States called benefit corporations, but that doesn't apply here. It doesn't really stand for anything. It's just basically B, plan B.
What happened to A?
Well, plan A isn't working, is it? Plan A is, yeah.
Okay,
plan A is capitalism, and actually we need a plan B, which is a better form of capitalism, and B Corp is that.
Okay, so this is the interesting bit, really. As you said, you've got to make a buck. You've got to be able to pay your way. Why would a company choose to become a B Corp? What's the thing that would push a company into being ready for that?
Some people ask me, a lot of people ask me, and I'm pleased you haven't asked this question, is have you seen any commercial advantage through being a B Corp? Mm. Now, I think in the first 4 years of being one, no, none at all. So if that's your, I do think that is probably true now, but if that's your motivation, then you're probably not coming at it from the right direction. I think there's been a tremendous increase in interest in B Corp over the last, really, probably since the Extinction Rebellion demonstrations, which were, I think, in spring 2019.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm ambassador for the movement here, so I get quite a lot of people emailing me and stuff. And those emails and phone calls and whatever have increased exponentially, really, since then. So, give you an example, back to trade shows, we've had the B Corp logo next to our logo on our stand for ever since 2016. For the first 3 or 4 years, no one knew what it was. And last year, suddenly everyone knows what it is. Well, not everyone, but a lot more people. Mm. I think businesses, the kind of whole capitalism system really is broken down over the last, well, probably over the last more than decade, actually, but it's come to people's realization that capitalism really isn't working. I mean, September 2019, the Financial Times, which is the bastion of capitalism, really, in terms of print journalism, had its front page said, capitalism, time for a reset. So if the Financial Times thinks capitalism isn't working, then it probably isn't. And I think people now, particularly with the pandemic this year and all that went on last year in terms of greater awareness of climate change, people are actually sick and tired with companies that are only there to make money, that are stealing from the planet, stealing from other people, making some rich people even richer, and they've had enough of it. So over the last 12 months, there's been a tremendous upsurge in companies knowing that they need to be better. Give you an example. We had an environmental conference last year for our suppliers. A few other people came as well, but it's primarily for our suppliers. And lots of people came, which was great. And it was the most amazing day. And I'm going to struggle not to get too emotional here, because half the room were crying at the end of this business conference. Now, this kind of thing didn't used to happen. You know, you can't show your emotions in a business event. What's going on? Yeah. But people, it's getting to them. And they know they as people need to change. But they also know if they're running a business, which most of these people were and still are, then they need to change their business. Otherwise, it could be too late for the planet, certainly. So
on lots of different indices as well, I guess. Now, in practical terms, what does it actually mean for you to be a socially driven business?
This answer could go on all day, but...
give it a go.
Well, in practical terms... think of staff within those areas I've mentioned. The best thing for us since becoming B Corp was, I'll be honest with you, initially it was mainly driven by me, which was fine. We probably had to do that to head in the right direction. But as the years have gone on, most of the good stuff we do, and I'll tell you some of the stuff we do in a minute, has come from people within the company, their ideas, their initiatives. And that to me is the evidence that is well and truly within our DNA now. So we do all sorts of things, to be honest. There's probably too many to mention. So on the environmentalism side, we became carbon neutral last year.
Now, I really need to ask you, but carry on.
Okay, we'll come back to that. We, at the point, we're now encouraging suppliers to be in the same direction as us. It might get more forceful than that as time goes on. We, all the our, you know, stuff we do in our own office, we do a lot more recycling. Our waste is dealt with a lot better than it was. And the nice thing is, actually, this does have a knock-on effect to people's personal lives at home as well. And I know people have changed the way they buy their electricity at home because of seeing what we've done in the office. Community-wise, we work with local schools. We work with the local food bank. We try and be a kind of pillar of goodness in our local community where our office is. Bit difficult at the moment because everyone's still working at home. In terms of our workers, we give more holiday than we used to. We do sabbaticals. We share profits. We have a share scheme for employees. So anyone who's been there for a year now has share options. And the idea is that over time, I will own less and less of the company, and the people who work there will own more and more, and then I can just disappear. that's a few things.
Yeah. So what's interesting about that is it's not just a mindset. It is a strategic shift in a company. I mean, it literally influences the structure of your company. Is that a big part of what you're doing?
Yes. So every meeting we have, it is those three things: people, planet, profit. And we try and have those three parts of what we are in every meeting we do. So whether that's management meetings or team meetings every Tuesday morning. Back in the day, we just used to talk about the numbers like most companies do. But these days, the numbers are the last thing we talk about. And we talk about stuff we're doing with people and stuff we're doing with planet as well, because we do hold the three of those things equally. Now, we are still a for-profit company. We're not a social enterprise. We are for-profit. Now, some of the profits get shared out, as I've just said. But I do think that if you focus on people and planet, actually the profit comes anyway. If you're just looking at the numbers, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
James Timpson is a great example of this. You know, the shoe key cutting shoe repair company. He kindly wrote a commendation from a book, and his thing is the key to leading a strong business is people, planet, profit. People and planet. If you get those principles right, profit follows, and that is so true. If you're just focusing on the numbers, A, people don't enjoy working there. B, they don't feel fulfilled. The best way of generating profit is to have a bunch of happy people who are enjoying the work, knowing that they're not just making some rich shareholder even richer, and actually doing some good for the world as well in terms of the planet side. You will be more profitable.
This goes back to the question that sort of you intimated that annoys you. You know, what's the business benefit from it? But you reckon that's actually embedded in the basic principle of this?
Yeah, absolutely. It can't be the reason you do it. You've got to do it because you want to do the right thing. But there was some data from those first 40 odd companies. I think it was 42 companies that certified in 2015. Over the next 2 years, because part of the certification is that you have to declare your turnover and profit figures each time you certify. So they had the data to show that the average growth per year of those initial B Corp companies was 14%. Now, GDP was about 1% over that period. So it is true that companies that look to do the right thing actually often end up being more profitable as well.
So there's a business case as well as a social case, I guess.
And investors now actually are looking to invest in businesses that are doing this because they realize, maybe not in the short term, but that's, you know, I don't believe in short-term investment. If you're investing for the medium or long term, they know sustainable businesses, people that are looking after their people, are looking after the planet, will be more profitable.
It's not difficult
to work out, really, is it? But people don't do it because of fear, actually. It's like giving away is scary for some people.
But
many religions in the world talk about giving away and getting back, and that's exactly how it works.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, let's get a little bit more specific. Cotswold Fair has recently become the first carbon neutral specialty food wholesaler. I mean, that sounds quite spectacular. What changes did you have to make to achieve it? Were you nearly there anyway? And did it have a big impact on the way you did business?
I think we're the only carbon neutral wholesaler, full stop, actually, not just food and drink. I don't know about that. But look, the main thing here is data. We probably would have liked to do it before, but we didn't have the data. So we made a huge change last year, changed all our logistics massively, which created a 47% reduction in our carbon anyways. It took off, I think, 1.7 million miles off our distribution.
And was there any one particular thing that was the sort of the real low hanging fruit?
There's two sides to this. One is doing what you can to reduce carbon. Now, unfortunately, as things stand at the moment, and this will be different in 3 years' time, if you're a delivery company, you can't do it with electric vehicles at the moment, not if you're delivering all over the UK like us. If you're just in a city, yes, you can, but wider, no. So reducing carbon down as far as you can go. So we did that by changing where our warehouse was and also the way the goods got to customers, which is a bit technical, but basically a much less went via a hub in the Midlands and much more went direct to customers. And all sorts of other things like backhauling and all that stuff. I'm not a logistics person. I've got a good person who is. But so But then offsetting the rest. And obviously to offset, you need the data. So we know every kilo that we ship, we have the carbon data for that.
Yeah.
So it's quite a big figure to offset all that carbon, because we are doing millions of miles a year. But it's more doable because we've reduced the carbon involved. And obviously over the years, we will aim to reduce until everything is delivered in electric vehicles. And we will be not just net zero, but zero.
Yeah, which would be very exciting.
It's not actually, a lot more companies could do this. And it's to their shame that they don't, if I'm honest. Yeah. A load of companies could be carbon neutral and they're not.
Yeah, and presumably, I mean, making these changes as well as making you assess the carbon impact, it must save money in some way. And if it's saving carbon, shouldn't it also be saving money, or is it a bit more complicated than that?
It's a bit more complicated than that. And it's all to do with the way pallets move around our country. So, no, it does cost us, more, well, I haven't got the exact figure in my head, but it's tens of thousands is what it costs us. But it's only really the cost of one person. So it's not a huge amount, really, is it?
Yeah. Now there are probably lots of companies who would like to do this and feel that for various reasons they can't, or that it's a risk to do it. Put yourself in front of a bunch of these people, maybe in the pub, and tell us what would you say to them to push them into becoming a B Corp?
Well, I think that conversation is a lot easier. Well, you can't go to the pub, can you, mate? But
with family, maybe.
It's a lot easier now since the pandemic, but not to have the conversation then. It's not the pub bit. But yeah. I do think it's an easier conversation to have, because I think amongst consumers, a lot more now want to do the right thing. I mean, this pandemic, many people would say, is due to us abusing the planet in various ways. I don't know if a number of people will have seen the David Attenborough program on TV a month or so ago. So I think that if they're going to have a business that's going to be here in 5 years' time, 10 years' time, they need to do this stuff. I think a lot of people deep down know that. And I think a lot of businesses, the more traditional businesses that aren't interested in this stuff, just won't be here. That's the simple facts of the matter is, if you want to be here in 5 years' time, you've got to do this stuff. There's no choice, because consumers are voting with their wallets more and more than they ever have done before. And you'll run out of customers, basically.
Yeah.
So I think that's by far and away the biggest kind of commercial argument, if you like, to heading in this direction, is because this is what people want to buy.
Yeah. Now, can you tell us a bit about the triple bottom line concept? What is it, and how can you use it to measure a company's social, environmental, and ethical values?
Well, the triple bottom line is really just the people, planet, profit motif. And obviously the B Corp assessment is measuring all that and more. But I think it's, my book, which I might as well mention, Forces for Good, was about, that was the book, actually. It was People, Planet, Profit, da-da, end of. However, as I was writing it, so this the three Ps, as they're known, was a guy called John Elkington came up with that. I think it's 26, 27 years ago now. And he wrote the foreword for the book. But as I was writing the book, I realized actually we need a fourth P. So I did mention this to John. I said, do you mind if I expand it? Because the fourth P, and I don't really know what it stands for, but I realized as I was writing the book, we needed a fourth bottom line, and that was actually us. You can go so far on the right intentions, but if we're really going to do this stuff, we need to change too. I've been looking at it just from an outward, let's change the world. Great. A lot of people probably agree with that. Let's make the world a better place. But actually, I realized that, and I've realized from my own personal journey, that you can't do that unless you're engaging with some personal change yourself.
Yeah.
And getting our emotions involved. I'll just give you a very quick example of that. So I was speaking actually about the three P's at a Chamber of Commerce event. This was as I was writing the book, so 2 or 3 years ago. And, you know, the talk was people, planet, and actually if you do that, you'll be more profitable, just what I've just said to you. Mm. However, I got onto the planet bit, and I put a slide up of some Bangladeshi people who had been flooded out of their homes or wading waist-deep through water. I put this slide up, and as I did, I just started weeping on the stage, which is when you're there to do a talk, it's a bit embarrassing because you're not able to talk.
yeah, absolutely.
But it was at that point that, yes, I agreed with environmentalism before that, but engaging on an emotional level, the fact that we're, to be blunt, killing people in poorer parts of the world through not looking after the planet, I know that I've been a lot more driven to head in this direction since then. And that was 3 years ago. We've moved. In fact, the environmental part of the B Corp assessment was probably our lowest scoring area.
Mm.
Then it's actually if this certification goes through, which I'm sure it will, it's actually now the second highest score for us in our B Corp certification. So, and I know part of that is through me just being a lot more driven because I've realised the enormity of what we're doing here and I've engaged with it on an emotional level. So that's the fourth bottom line for me is changing us as well as changing the world.
Which kind of strikes a chord, I think, with a lot of the way that people are thinking about their position within the overall situation. Now, B Corp was introduced in the UK in 2015. And you're talking a lot about the fact that people need to be more aware of new issues over the last few years. Do the companies that you work with is there a higher awareness of B Corp? And what about the consumers themselves? Is that going to be important, or as you say, is it about you and about how you feel about your company?
Yeah, I think consumers are wanting this. Well, we're a wholesaler to retailers.
Mm.
I think quite a lot's changed amongst our supplier base. I do think, particularly again, since the this year, due to the pandemic, a lot more consumers are now wanting to do the right thing in terms of how they buy stuff. Unfortunately, retailers are behind everyone at the moment. They are still just looking at the single bottom line in many cases. Not all, there are a few exceptions. But that to me is the thing that probably needs to change most. But the consumers will drive that. Big retailers and small retailers will have to change because their consumers are demanding better, basically.
Do you see a time when B Corp will be on a label of a consumer product?
It is already, actually.
Ah.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you think of Ella's Kitchen, the baby food, I'm pretty sure the B Corp logo is on their products. Cook, frozen food company, it's on there. So yeah, if you've got a consumer brand, why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Again, probably 3 years ago, would waste of time in terms of getting more sales. But I think now there's, I don't know what the awareness, I think it's 13% actually awareness of B Corp. So it's not huge, but it will become bigger.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying here that it's only B Corps that are good companies. That's just not true. I mentioned Timpsons earlier. They're not B Corp, never will be. Great company, 10% employees, come straight from prison. It's not, B Corp doesn't have a monopoly on good companies by any means, but it is the only way of certifying how good companies are for the world.
And if you don't look at yourself and come up with some data about that, it's very difficult to
you've got to measure something, haven't you? Yeah.
Now, just my very last question. There are a lot of businesses struggling with the COVID environment, and investment in becoming a B Corp, you know, getting B Corp status, is in time and money and organisation and worry about profits. Mm. What would you say to people who are considering that and thinking that maybe getting B Corp status is a low priority?
Well, the interesting, and I only found this out a couple of weeks ago, up to the end of 2019, I think there was just over 250 B Corps in the UK. So it started with 40 in 2015. So, you know, that's not massively fast growth, is it? End of 2019, just over 250. Since lockdown in March this year, 100 new companies are certified.
Wow.
So that's the opposite of what you're saying. So
yeah, absolutely.
I think, you know, there's a lot of companies, obviously some of those were working on this well before COVID, but there is a huge amount of interest in this at the moment. And I think there is a sense, certainly within the food and drink sector, and you'd be interested to know that food and drink companies are the biggest sector within B Corps in the UK. Mm. And that's, I'd probably take some credit for that. And so does Kirk and Ella's Kitchen and other companies that are influencers in the sector. Mm. So I think it's only in the food and drink world, there's a sense that actually we're going to get left behind if we don't do this.
Yeah. And if, you know, I think COVID-19 has sort of got people looking in the mirror, and you know, not just at themselves, but at what they're doing and how they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, there's three kind of bastions of capitalism, if you like. One is money itself, which, you know, people lost trust and faith in the financial sector in 2008. Last year, there was a huge increase in awareness, starting with the Blue Planet and moving into carbon, about climate change. And this year, as the third bastion of capitalism, is basically how you treat your people and the inequality issues that have come to light this year. I think that is, you know, the three kind of pillars of capitalism are broken down, and that's why people realize we need a better way. They still call themselves capitalism, although most people don't. I wouldn't use that word because of the wrong connotations, but you know, we need a better way, and B Corp is certainly one way of doing that.
And just last question, do you have any expectations about the future that have not been kicked aside by COVID-19? What do you think is going to happen in the next 5 to 10 years in this area?
What, in B Corp or for us?
Yeah, well, for B Corp and for companies who take on board the sort of people, planet, profit and us concept.
Yeah, well, I think they will increase, and people who don't will decrease. That's the simple facts of the matter. And part of that
nice and bluntly, I like that, yeah.
Yeah, well, I think that is largely driven from people want to work for these companies.
Mm.
And the best people are going to want to work for companies that are doing some good in the world. And I've had a couple of emails from people who've read the book, and it's slightly a bit of pressure here because they've actually read the book and they said, I've just left my job. Well, hang on a minute. I didn't tell you to do that.
that is pressure,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah. And I think I've had three emails like that. Yeah. And these are people that actually, I don't want to work for this company anymore.
Hmm.
I want to work for a company that is doing some good in the world, and I can't actually work for these people anymore. And one of them did email me last week to say they just got another job, actually.
Thank God for that.
That's a relief. But yeah, I just think that's the move. And obviously, the more younger people come into the workplace, you know, half the workforce now, I think, or maybe next year, are millennials or Generation Y. So,
yeah.
You know, they are far more aware of this stuff than old people like me are. So, yeah, that's obviously the direction of travel. So, yeah, you can't not do it.
It's exciting times. Well, thank you so much, Paul, for your time. You've been listening to the Tabletop Podcast brought to you by Food Matters, and you heard from Paul Hargreaves and me, Stephen Gates. Paul, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
If you enjoyed this episode, you might like one of our other podcasts in which we explore pretty much every aspect of the food industry, from farming robots to the circular food economy. Subscribe to get every episode freshly delivered to you on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, take a look at foodmatters.co.uk. Goodbye. You've been listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by Food Matters. Subscribe to get every episode freshly delivered on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, please visit foodmatters.co.uk.